Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour 1 Podcast.
And welcome back in. New week has arrived, and thanks so much for being a part of it. One thing we will not be doing this week, and that is speculating on who Nick Saban will choose as his OC in D.C. That has pretty much happened, and we'll share that information with you as it has not been made official yet, but it's all, well, it is official. Nick Saban hasn't sent up three puffs of white smoke, but Kevin Steele is back at Alabama. And he will be the defensive coordinator. He was the first defensive coordinator. His career is storied. Played football at Tennessee, worked for John Majors up there, then went to Alabama. He was Nick Saban's first hire as a defensive coordinator, and certainly an important hire. Also, he left Alabama, came back, left again, went to LSU, defensive coordinator at Auburn. Remember, almost got the Auburn job, almost got the Tennessee job, too. He was the interim head coach when Jeremy Pruitt got to Ziggy, and he's back at Alabama. Want to know more about your school's coaching search? You'll be waiting a while. Why is there no transparency in college football? Shocking. Who better to talk about transparency than somebody who has made his career trying to pull that curtain down? And that's Richard Johnson. Great to have you back, RJ. Thank you for the time. We've missed seeing you. Tell us about your research and what you learned in this piece. Good afternoon.
Paul, good to be back with you. Good to talk to you. My Mondays are a little empty without seeing you in the hallways up there in Charlotte.
Well, we miss you. I don't miss the other guy, whatever his name was, but I do miss you.
It's good to be back, Paul.
Well, help us understand the story. What did you learn as you tried to figure out more about why we don't learn much about coaching searches?
Yeah, well, you know, it honestly was kind of started off as a thought experiment. You know, I am jealous of my friends who cover the NFL in a couple respects when they cover coaching searches, at least head coaching searches and coordinator searches. In that, you know, the NFL teams just tweet out who they've interviewed as they've interviewed them. I think it's kind of fascinating, you know, and just as I saw this with the Texans last week, and, you know, they said, we've interviewed D'Amico Ryans, and then a couple days later, we've hired D'Amico Ryans, and they had plenty of other people that they talked to during the search. But I wondered, you know, is that even possible in college? Is that even probable in college? You know, if you talk to any AD during a coaching search, ADs always say that they want information. Information is one of their biggest weapons, one of their biggest assets when they go out on the marketplace to replace their head football coach. So I wondered aloud to a few people, what would it take? Is it even possible? The answer, I will, spoiler alert, is no. I don't think it's particularly possible. I think it would be interesting if we heard Alabama has interviewed Ryan Grubb for the offensive coordinator search. Alabama has interviewed Tommy Reese for the offensive coordinator search. It'll be a cold day in hell before Nick Saban, grants the Alabama Twitter account access to tweet out who it is he interviewed throughout the process. And that's for starters. You know, the other thing kind of has to deal with the base level, just structure of the marketplace in college versus the NFL. And how coaching contracts are even structured. In college, coaches are a little bit more kind of the independent contractor end of the spectrum, whereas coaches in the NFL are more tied to a league or their team. The league grants interview requests or denies interview requests, little things like that. And then, of course, there's recruiting. You know, it would be one of the easiest negative recruiting pitches of all time if I'm scouting against a different team or I'm recruiting against a different team and all I have to do is pull up that team's Twitter account to see that that assistant coach has interviewed with XYZ over the last couple of years, and maybe he's 1 foot in, 1 foot out is what I would tell to mom.
Yeah, that is a big factor there, and it's a good point. As much as I would like to see, and you would see, I'd like to see more transparency. Speaking of transparency, we still haven't heard officially whether Alabama has made the choices yet, but we know that Tommy Rees is going there from Notre Dame. We also know Kevin Steele will be the new defensive coordinator. Let me get your thoughts on, first, Tommy Rees from Notre Dame to Alabama. What do you make out of that?
Well, I think it's interesting because I don't know if you know what – I don't know if any of us know what a full real deal Tommy Rees offense may look like. I think Tommy Rees was coaching a lot to his personnel at Notre Dame. That's not a detriment to Tommy. Tommy was doing playing the hand he was dealt. I don't think Notre Dame really had a game-changing wide receiver. They had an incredible tight end and have had a really good stable of tight ends for a couple of years here. So what do you do if you have really good tight ends and a pretty good running back and maybe you're a little deficient at quarterback and wide receiver? Well, Paul, you run the heck out of the ball. And you have a lot of big personnel sets with a lot of tight ends. And that's what Notre Dame did. And, you know, you saw particularly the Clemson game. They'll get after you if they can overpower you. And it can work. So, but I don't know if that's the offense that Tommy Rees really wants to run if he had his druthers. On the other side, I think we've got to continue to ask some questions about what exactly Alabama's personnel looks like. Obviously, quarterback is the big one. Who is playing quarterback next year? Are they going to run it back with Jalen Milroe, or is Ty Simpson the one? Are they going to bring in a transfer? Who knows over the next couple months? I think Alabama has been deficient at wide receiver last season. I think that was a big problem with their lack of output on offense. I think they're probably pretty good at running back, but, you know, what does offensive line look like? What is tight end? What does Alabama's offensive personnel look like? I think the marriage of the unknowns is what's going to be fascinating about Alabama's offseason.
Richard, let me get your thoughts on Kevin Steele, who returns to Alabama for the third time. He is well-traveled, well-respected. There was a push for Jeremy Pruitt. Obviously, that did not work out. Todd Grantham leaves to go to the NFL. Is this the right choice for Nick Saban, or was it simply somebody he had to hire based on the available candidates?
Well, you know, there's something to be said for the familiarity. You know, as we both know, when you come into Alabama's system, when you come into Alabama's program, you don't run your defense, you run Nick's defense. And I'm sure that Kevin Steele knows that and is used to it, and you know, it'll be kind of old hat for Kevin Steele having been in that system and even being with Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee for the time that he was. What I think is fascinating about Kevin Steele is also his stint as director of player personnel, kind of in the front office at Alabama, right around the time that he was there. I just think it's interesting because that's kind of when Alabama started to kind of change things up as far as what they look like on the field. They were kind of getting out of the 3 yards in a cloud of dust Alabama era and kind of transitioning into the, you know, RPO, that sort of stuff, at least on offense. So, you know, it's no secret that Alabama's defensive personnel, to an extent, looks a little bit differently than it did in the, you know, 2010, 2011, 2012 era Alabama. Part of that is because they are just matching to the way offenses changes and have changed and adapted over the last few years. So with Steele, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be worried about can he speak Sabanese or can he speak Saban language. I think Saban went through a process and he landed on somebody who's pretty familiar.
RJ, before you go, a number of commentators have come on here in recent weeks, you know, whether this is just simply a reaction or an overreaction. And they have told us they really believe LSU is the team now to beat in the SEC West. We've talked about Alabama here in this first segment. Where are you on that in relation to who is best suited from that side to challenge Georgia next year?
You know, when you look at the SEC West, it's not going to be a popular opinion because of how this season went. And I think a lot of people may look at the hire of Bobby Petrino and say, what's going on there? But I am, again, going to have my head turned, I believe, to College Station to look at what Texas A&M is putting together this year. There will be a hype train with A&M because there will always probably be a hype train with that program. LSU, I'm interested. I'm not necessarily ready to stamp of approval yet. We got 6 months of talking season to develop some opinions about who can challenge Bama and who can then challenge Georgia out of the East. But A&M, I'm looking at A&M thinking, was that an aberration last year? Or is that going to be more of the norm for them? Can they get the ship righted?
Richard Johnson joining us talking about the news of the day, and we appreciate it very, very much. We'll get your reaction to what happened over the weekend, a look ahead when we come back.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
A couple more stories to share with you. South Carolina women went up to Connecticut yesterday and knocked off UConn again. This is becoming a familiar story. They are the number one team in the country. She's done it three in a row over Geno. And this was, they played for the national championship a year ago. Nick Saban believes Jalen Hurts can be claimed by Bama, even though that was Randy there. Even though he graduated from Alabama, but he left there to go to Oklahoma for his final year. More coming out on the sordid Jaden Rashada deal. How the four-star went from a $13 million man to a new school. Andy Staples will join us and talk about that a little bit later on. How about the Hall of Famer, Dan Issel, joining us shortly? One of the great players in Kentucky history. And then later on, you ever seen those message board geniuses on Twitter? You probably don't want to see them if your school is not doing well. Let's get to the calls. And Andre is in Atlanta. Hello, Andre.
Coach Paul Feinbaum. What's going on, Coach?
We are doing well. Thank you for calling.
Listen, you know I'm an LSU fan, but I went to the United Rentals up in Athens, Georgia, and they're around there strutting like Rhode Island Reds, Coach. Oh, they're so proud of the Bulldogs and everything. But, you know, I explained to the guys, LSU will be back. We coming back to the top. The West is a little bit tougher than the East, but I think we're on the right path. What you think, Coach Feinbaum?
Well, first of all, I don't know how you could say the West is tougher than the East, considering Georgia has gone the last two seasons undefeated in the regular season.
I think the West is a harder road to hold than the East side is. Georgia ain't got nobody over here really, but Tennessee. Who else do they have to challenge them, Coach?
Well, that's fair, but if you put Georgia in the West, and do you think anything would have been different the last 2 years?
I don't think so. I ain't naive, you know.
Well, I'm just doing a reality check. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. Georgia was.
I don't know anything. I just ask the questions here. I'm like the guy at the circus.
Look, yeah, we went right on behind the woodshed with everybody else, and Georgia would have took care of their business behind the woodshed. What you think? How this thing looking with Oklahoma and Texas coming in a year early?
That was a big surprise the other day. But I know one thing about negotiations. To me, it doesn't look like it's over yet. So I think that window is still open. I mean, basically, it looks like you have conferences and television networks all trying to figure out the price. It's not really about anything other than what will it cost, and if we do it now versus later.
Coach, they had a famous bank robber named Willie Sutton. They asked him, why did he rob banks? And he said, that's where the money is.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks, Coach. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much, Andre. It's always good to hear from you. John is up next in Louisville.
Thank God you're back, Paul. I mean, there was no football this weekend.
That was, first time since August we have not had a football game.
And don't bring up the flag football game.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not watching that.
As bad as the Grammys. Hey, I've got some thoughts on the coaching hires as well as how it's going to affect Notre Dame and Miami. But I was somewhat underwhelmed by the selections. It just felt like Nick had to go to number three or number four in choices as this played out.
Well, I don't think there's any question that Tommy Rees was probably his fourth choice. I think that's pretty well documented. Now, as far as Kevin Steele, I think Kevin Steele was always on the list. It took Saban a while, I think, to figure out what he wanted to do. But I think that's a much more that choice is much more understandable than the other one.
Well, Legend signed off on him, so I'm good for that. And frankly, I think Alabama's got the talent, the team chemistry, and culture to be successful with any choices, as opposed to, say, Texas A&M without any team chemistry or culture. I mean, you've got the DJ Durkin, who was fired for toxic culture at Maryland, and you've got the poster child for cheating and lying in Bobby Petrino. So I'm really dubious how well those two coaches will make a difference.
Yeah, but you have to remember something, John. The situation at A&M is, I mean, they are in desperation mode. They don't have time to build a new culture. They just have to salvage next season.
I appreciate that. Notre Dame, I think they've been hurt significantly because Tommy Rees was also their quarterback whisper to bring in Sam Hartman. I'm sure he's not happy to see the coach going.
No.
And they've got a five-star quarterback coming in the next year. We'll see if he keeps with his
pledge. I agree with you on that. I mean, I've never seen a coach get off to a faster start than Marcus Freeman. He was owning everything a year ago, but the season really went haywire. I mean, they ended it well, but there were some just miserable games, and I'm like you. I'm just not so sure that program has the bite it used to have.
No, I agree. And then Miami's got to replace both coordinators, and I think that's going to be a real challenge down there. They've got a lot of paper play players. We'll see how well Cristobal does with his selections.
I think Cristobal's a really good coach, but this is going to take time, and he's already lost his two coordinators, the one he fired, one he lost. But you know, I do believe in him as a head coach, but that window is going to narrow very quickly for him if he can't turn it around. Kerry is in Baton Rouge.
Paul, thanks so much for taking my call. I am assuming that you have heard what is going down in Baton Rouge with Dale Brown Court.
Yes, I have.
I wanted to call do you know anyone who has done more for human rights in the state of Louisiana than Dale Brown?
I do not. Dale Brown is, to me, one of the most influential and important figures in the history of the SEC.
Could I share with you a Dale and Sue story, Sue mm-hmm. Gunter?
Sure.
So, on Friday, the LSU Board of Supervisors will be voting to make it Gunter Brown Court. at one point in both of their careers, they played on what's called a tartan court. It's kind of like they practiced on a tartan court, both right. the women's and the men's teams. And Sue wanted a new court because the tartan court was not treating her players well. It was not the best floor to play on. And Sue came to Dale and asked Dale, would he be willing to try to get a new court, a new practice court for both the men and the women. And Dale fought very hard to get new practice court for LSU for both the men and both the women. And the women practiced first before the men. And through a long process and through a lot of fighting, after Sue's request, Dale fought for it, got a new practice court, a wooden practice court for both the men and the women. And on the day that it was the first day they could practice on it, Sue Gunter, she came and she said, you know what, Dale has fought so hard for us. Dale has fought for this. The men ought to be the first one to practice on this because this is the result of Dale's work. Paul, you and I share a mutual friendship with Dale. He's a dear friend of mine for many, many years. I have fought for 6 years now to get his name on the court. And due to some just weird things that have happened in Louisiana, you know as well as I do the politics in Louisiana is some of the worst in the country. They are going to they might be renaming the court. And Paul, I just think this is a travesty. And I think Dale's work for human rights, his love for Louisiana, his love for LSU, Paul, there's not a single man that I know that has done more for just humanity than Dale Brown. And I would love to hear your thoughts.
Kerry,
on
number one, I agree with everything you said. I mean, Dale Brown has been somebody important part of my life since I was in college, and you probably don't know this, but he helped me get my first job in Louisiana. I feel Tim Brando has kept me up to date on some of the things that you're talking about. I don't know all the details, but I appreciate you bringing all that up. And as we honor the SEC with this eight-part series on Monday night, I think it's important to remember the significance and the influence that Dale Brown has had. We'll take a break. Speaking of that influence, we'll talk in just a moment with someone who has also played a very critical role in the history of Kentucky basketball and the SEC. Dan Issel joins us next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And somebody who had a few battles with Pete Maravich and everyone else is a Hall of Fame former Kentucky player, Dan Issel, who we so grateful to join us. Dan, thank you for making time. Good afternoon. And what's it like when you start seeing some of these videos that we're showing in this documentary? It must take you back to a different time in your life, but one that had to be really nice. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me. Yes, it was a special, special time. I watched the first installment of Southern Hoops, and of course, most of it was about Kentucky. And when you talk SEC and basketball in the 50s, it has to be about Kentucky. So I think the show is very, very well done, and I'm anxious to see tonight's episode.
Yeah, there was a, if I could stay on the Maravich theme, there was a pretty famous battle you had with Pete late in his career. I believe he shattered the 60 mark. You shattered the 50 mark. Of course, Kentucky won. But what do you remember about that epic game that many people still talk about?
Yeah, at that time, Paul, there were only three stations, and the local stations got to choose if they wanted to take a basketball game or not. And at that time, it broke the record the year before when Lou Alcindor, of course, Kareem, played Houston and Elvin Hayes in the Astrodome the year before. And actually, more stations carried the game with Pete and I, LSU and Kentucky, than that. We broke the record for that game. But, I tell people a lot of coaches tried to devise defenses to stop Pete. And you couldn't, because he was such a clever ball handler. He was going to get the shot off no matter how many people you ran at him. But Coach Rupp was different. Coach Rupp said, we're going to play him straight up, and he'll get his, but we'll make sure nobody else beats us. And this is a stat that I love to tell. In the six games we played head-to-head, Pete averaged 52 points a game. And the closest they came to beating us was 9 points.
Well, in this famous game, Pete had 64. You had 51. You won the game 121-105. I'll never forget C.M. Newton, who I'm sure you remember well, told me a story once the night that Pete scored. I think he had 69 at Coleman Coliseum. He said, but we won the game, which is, there aren't many people, that remember Pete Maravich, but, you were averaging 32 a game, I believe, your final year there. So you understood what he was doing, but you also understood the team concept playing for Adolph Rupp.
Paul, I tell people my senior year I finished second in the nation in scoring and only lost the scoring title by 10 points. A game, 10 points a game. Pete averaged 44 his senior year.
It's so easy, Dan, to talk about the changes in basketball. You could go back 10 years and follow it. But as you look at the game that you played versus what we see today, is it even recognizable?
No. And it's not recognizable for a couple of pluses and a couple of minuses, Paul. I think today the kids are just so athletic. It's unbelievable. I was at the game Saturday night, Florida and Kentucky, and to see what these young men can do, it's just incredible. But on the negative side, I don't think they have the fundamentals that we had back there. And then, of course, now it's either three-pointers or a dunk. You don't see much of an intermediate game anymore.
Let's talk about Adolph Rupp, because I think everyone today knows who he is primarily because his name's on the arena, but I think he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves in terms of what he was all about. Tell us about deciding to play for him, number one, and what it was like once you got there.
Yeah, well, when I made the decision that I was going to try to make a career out of basketball, going to Kentucky was a pretty easy choice, because at that time they had more All-Americans and more professional players than any program in the country. And, of course, I didn't know that much about Coach Rupp until I got here. But he was just so far ahead of his time, Paul. You didn't have to scout us. You could go down to the bookstore and buy his book, and every play we ran was diagrammed right there in the book. But we just, we ran them to such precision that you had a hard time stopping us.
And you got there at an interesting time. I believe it was you may have already been there when Kentucky lost the famous NCAA title game. Coach Rupp, I think, coached, until 72. So you were there for most of the tail end of his career. What did you see in him from a day-to-day basis? And what can you share with us? Because, he really, no matter how you cut it, is one of the iconic figures in the history of the game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And he won four NCAA championships. And what a lot of people don't realize, and it was mentioned in the first episode of Southern Hoops, maybe the best team that he ever had at Kentucky was after the Fabulous Five, and they were ineligible because of the betting scandal. They were ineligible to play in the NCAA tournament, so he could have easily had a couple more. But, you know, it was just it was great to play for him. And I was really fortunate, Paul, because after I graduated, if our relationship had ended with my eligibility, you know, I might not feel the same way I do about Coach, but we had a basketball camp together. And when he retired from coaching in 72, he actually was involved, you know, in a name-only deal with the Kentucky Colonels. So I got to know him quite a bit better after that, and he was a pretty amazing man.
Chatting with Dan Issel about the Southern Hoops, the history of SEC football. Dan, if I could get a current modern-day question to you. You said you were at the game the other night, and I suspect Kentucky fans are feeling a little bit better today than 4 weeks ago when they were apoplectic about the beginning of the season. But I mean, it's easy to laugh about, but I mean, I think that's great. I mean, you know it better than anyone. The Kentucky fans do understand what they're watching. These aren't sidewalk alums who have never seen a basketball game. They know the sport. What's it like playing and being obviously now being a fan and an important part of that program's legacy and history?
Paul, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, they lost to South Carolina after getting blown out at Alabama, and people were starting GoFundMe accounts to buy Cal's contract. You know, I've never seen anything like it as far as fans are concerned. And I know other schools think they have the best fans and pro teams think they do, but it's just amazing here. I played 10 years in Denver, and I can walk down the street in Denver and nobody even recognizes me. I played at Kentucky 53 years ago, and I walked down the street and people talk to me like they saw me day before yesterday. I don't know how to explain it. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Well, Dan, I might add that it doesn't hurt that you're one of the greatest players in Kentucky history. But I know you didn't want to throw that in.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I don't know where I would rank, yeah, it was a great career and a fun time for sure, Paul.
And it's so interesting to reflect back, and I remember your career very well as a little bit younger person. And what people today don't realize is there were very few games on television. It was primarily you listened to the radio. How would you describe when you would go to various arenas? Because the coaches were unique. I mean, there were some real characters across the board. But you know, today it just seems like everything is so transparent. It's on TV, and it just seems like a different world today.
Right. Well, I mean, even the arenas in the SEC. I mean, you know, now Maravich Arena is really a nice arena. When we played LSU, that game you referenced earlier, it was in a rodeo arena, and you walked on plywood across dirt to get to the floor. And I remember the place at Alabama held about 3,000 people. So, you know, it's just it's a huge difference. The exposure, as you said, the exposure that the programs get today. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I know one thing. I don't know if I could have played with social media and all the pressure these kids are under today.
What do you think, before you go, Dan, about the current world that we live in? Now, Kentucky players always seem to be doing fairly well, at least going through, you know, however schools used to deal with the NCAA back then. But your thoughts on today's world of NIL and players commanding huge sums of money, regardless of the sport?
Yeah. You know, I thought Coach Saban, I read a piece on Coach Saban, and Coach Saban said a kid came in here who never played a down and asked for $500,000. He said, I'm not going to do that. I'm all for the kids getting money. I wish, Paul, that the NCAA had been ahead of this. I mean, they acted like they were going to win the court case, and I don't know how they thought that, because their record in court isn't very good. But it seemed like they were putting all their eggs in the basket of winning the suit, and had no plan going forward when NIL came available. But something's going to have to happen. Something's going to have to come into play to keep this thing regulated and within a reason.
Dan, what a pleasure to talk to you and have our audience get to hear you. It's so great to have you on, and we certainly look forward to tonight. You be well, and I hope you will come back sometime.
Thanks, Paul. Anytime you got my number, I'll do it anytime.
We would love it. Dan Issel, one of the all-time greats, and I mean all-time in college basketball history. We take a break here and get back to your phone calls right after this.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
So have you heard of the latest about Jim Boeheim? This is what he said the other day. This is an awful place we're in. That's hard to put the word in twice in a row in a sentence. This is an awful place we're in college basketball. Pittsburgh bought a team. Wake Forest bought a team. Miami bought a team. It's like, really, this is where we are. Jim Boeheim speaking the other day. It blew up, of course, and then he did the typical cheesy thing. He realized that he had accused half the world of cheating and apologized. What isn't so clear is why Jim Boeheim is still in college basketball. His basketball teams on the field have been disgraceful in recent years. His behavior off the field or off the court is even worse. And don't you think it's time for someone to
shut up.
maybe stick a fork in Jim Boeheim and said, you're done. You're out of here. What's he, 78 years old? Which there's nothing wrong with being 78 as long as you're still cognizant of your environment and cannot embarrass yourself and your program, which he continues to do both on and off the court. I'm not suggesting that Syracuse do anything. I mean, I'm just a singer in a rock and roll band. But would you fire him?
Absolutely.
I would too. It's time to go, Jim. It's over. And don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Yeah.
Dustin is up next in Tulsa. Hello, Dustin.
Good morning from Tulsa, Paul.
Morning.
Hey, brother. It's with great joy that I tell you that I can break this news. I have actually just in the last couple of minutes been offered the head coaching job at Syracuse. So I'm actually going to be taking over for Jim Boeheim. Crazy that you.
Can we tweet that?
Yeah, I dare you.
We have not substantiated it, but it doesn't really matter, does it?
Paul, nothing would make me happier than to see your show's Twitter feed tweet that some guy named Dustin from Tulsa is going to be taking over for Jim Boeheim. I would love that. Hey, I wanted to call in and talk about Saban and then ask you a quick question here. As far as Saban goes, all weekend and then this morning, everybody's, you know, gnashing their teeth and rending their garments over these hires. And I got to tell you, as a Razorback, I'm not the biggest fan of Nick Saban. I think the way he approached Frank Ragnow after one of our games a few years ago after Frank's dad's died, had died that week. I thought that was a class act. So I'll always have a soft spot for Saban for that. But man, he's like Tom Brady. I would not put money against the man until I knew he was at least 3 days dead, you know, and everybody's calling for this dynasty to be over. I think there are a lot of people going to be sorely mistaken, you know, when Alabama makes another run and then Auburn does their best to go 7-5, maybe 8-4 next year. I don't want to count Saban out of it by any stretch of the imagination.
Thank you for that hot take. Let's consider Richard up next in Atlanta. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Paul. Thanks so much for taking my call. How are you today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So I want to talk about the Todd Monken situation at Georgia, and I want to say a few words, and then I want to get your, based on your experience, which you have a lot of these situations with top coordinators at college schools going to the NFL. All that I know is what Monken has said. Now, he's first of all, I'm going to assume that he wouldn't have made like 4 or 5 trips twice to Tampa Bay to different pro programs if he wasn't interested in going in the pros. I'm just taking that for granted. Secondly, what he said is, I found this interesting. He said it's not always all about money. He said, I would rather have a 12-0 team at the North Pole than to have a, you know, 6-7 team in the pros. So I'm a little confused. Lastly, I want to say this before I get your take. Why doesn't Georgia go ahead and offer this guy another million, you know, $1 million to put him at $3 million to try and make a take on the situation, take some action before he actually makes a decision. Now, I'm going to listen to what you had to say about that.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.